We'll be talking sugars and carbohydrates next here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest, Professor Sue Nitzke of the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. Questions or comments for her? I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. We'd love to hear from you. Sue, welcome back.
Good to be here, Larry.
And you always bring a bunch of things with you, food products of sorts.
Well, actually, I did. I brought a few sugary things with me just in case the topic comes around to some of these different forms.
I tell you what, there seems to be a fair amount of confusion over sugars and carbs. For an example, high fructose corn syrup. How does that relate to sugars and starches?
Well, Larry, there's been so much written about high fructose corn syrup lately. It's the topic of books and articles in, you know, papers and magazines. And it's getting to be something we love to beat up on. You know, mm-hmm. If only we didn't have high fructose corn syrup in our diet, we'd be happier and healthier. And while there's, you know, like many things, there is an aspect of that that's true. One of the common myths is that people think that high fructose corn syrup is more, quote, fattening or calorie dense or doesn't make you as full so you eat more or things like that. But the literature and the research doesn't bear that out. High fructose corn syrup in the dietary guidelines is ranked as one of the forms of added sugars in our foods, mm-hmm. right along with some other favorites like sucrose or honey. Mm-hmm. And nutritionally, there is so little difference. They're practically interchangeable. If you want to have sugar, if you want to have high fructose corn syrup, it's mainly a food processor's decision about what works in their formulation and what's cheap.
And what's cheap?
To call a spade, yes.
Well, then as we look at the obesity, which some people call an epidemic, can we blame any of that on the intake of high fructose corn syrup, or is it? It sounds like it's a little more complicated than that.
Because high fructose corn syrup is one of the forms of added sugars, it is something that if we want to lose weight as an individual or as a society, reducing our intake of all forms of added sugars would probably help. One of the forms in particular is sugar-sweetened beverages. Mm-hmm. The dietary guidelines say that about a third of Americans' intake of added sugars in our overall diet is from beverages. And if we would just cut out those kinds of, you know, pop, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be carbonated to be, you know, a beverage mm-hmm. with added sugar, we would save so many calories. And some, but not all, studies show that the extra calories you take in from a sugar-sweetened beverage doesn't have the ability to make you feel full like a more solid food that even mm-hmm. if it had sugar in it, like a brownie versus a Coke. In some studies, a brownie mm-hmm. would be more satisfying and you would, at the end of the day, not have as many extra calories. And then, of course, ideally, we'd only have a little smidge in a brownie and no Coke.
That's hard for me to do.
Yeah, I know. We can all work on that, have a smaller.
Oh, man. Well, so we should, if we're going to have to drink or really want to drink those beverages, the Coke type.
Yeah, and I'm beverages. not picking on that brand. It's all sugar sweetened beverages.
But then are the diets fine?
Diet sodas. Well, we could do another show on that subject, actually. I brought along some artificial sweeteners with me, and I brought along one form of Diet Coke. Yes and no. There are a number of people who really don't like the idea of something sort of chemically formulated in their beverage. And for them, I say, you know what, just stay away from it. Mm-hmm. But also, don't fall for all those email internet scares that say, you know, whatever form it is, aspartame or some of the other forms cause this kind of cancer or that kind of headache or that kind of brain tumor or whatever. There's no good scientific evidence behind the messages that we commonly see on email messages and internet websites about how dangerous they are. And some And some studies show that when you have people trying to limit their calorie intake, using diet beverages helps many people do that. It's not that automatically you're going to take in less calories over the end of the day, but if you're working on that, it can be one of the tools that helps you. If you don't like that tool, don't use it.
Yeah. Fred in Adams County has a question for you, so let's go to Fred. Hi, Fred. Thanks for calling.
Good early afternoon, folks. I'm setting up in a forest fire tower as the fire danger goes up, and I enjoy this job. I don't get paid much, but the question is, folks, is I remember when I was younger working on a garbage truck, I mean 40 years ago, we used to get Orange Crush in a bottle, and it always said to protect the delicate flavor, it was, you know, brown. Now, as I recall back then, and some other little pop makers, they use cane sugar, and it always tasted better. Then I've read since then that some people believe that regular cane sugar is better. It gives pop a better flavor, and I certainly believe it does. So I'll let you go with that. But remember those days with Orange Crush in a bottle? Pop has never tasted that good since.
Okay.
Well, Fred, I want to tell you about a study.
Okay.
It was in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition just last year. And they took a regular cola-type beverage, and they sweetened one, you know, beverage A with sucrose, which is cane sugar,
yeah,
and beverage B with high fructose corn syrup. Mm-hmm. And they didn't tell the subjects, I think there were 30-some people, which is which. And they followed not only how sweet they thought it was, but how full it made them feel, whether they felt like eating more. And then they also watched, like, after the experiment was over, how much they ate at lunch.
Hmm.
And there was absolutely no difference between the sucrose or the high fructose corn syrup on any of those measures, which convinces me that, you know, if there is a difference, it's pretty darn small. And, you know, so Fred, and you could do this yourself. You could have somebody... Well, I guess you can't make up Orange Crush.
No, not anymore.
with and without sugar. But you could take like one of those Kool-Aid mix kind of things that's orange flavored, maybe one with no sugar in it. Mm-hmm. Do they still have that Kool-Aid that you put in your own sugar?
I don't know.
At it in years, but I bet there's some kind of beverage mix where you put in your own sugar. And then might be hard to find high fructose corn syrup on the other hand, but I'm sure there's a way to do this experiment. And the point is that when you don't know what's there, it's really, really hard to tell the difference in flavor or the other satiety factors that some people claim makes you eat more when you have one kind or another. Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty tough to tell the difference.
Right. I think you're splitting hairs. And what people, 99% of the people listening should probably concentrate on is just lower your intake of added sugar. And one great way to do that is to use less sugar-sweetened beverages. You know, remember water and remember milk. Some of the more nutritious beverages. When you have a meal, make it a point to have a nutritious beverage with your meal.
And when you're having a snack, water.
Yeah, have water. That's sort of one way to do it. And it's easy once you get used to it. But it's a habit for many of us just to reach for something with lots of sugar in it.
And Fred, keep your eyes peeled for those fires out there.
Yeah.
I once, total aside here, I was once going to... when I was a young guy, and I was going to do an interview with a guy that was in a fire tower, and I got to the fire tower, and I looked up at how tall it was, and it was kind of windy, and I decided I didn't want to carry a tape recorder up the tower, and I abandoned that idea.
Uh-huh.
So it takes a little bit of courage to do that. Fred, thanks. Deb in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hello. I was going to ask your guest about the water additives like Propel and Crystal Light, the sugar-free type that are supposed to be no calories, no nothing in them that will hurt you. Are those good for you, and will they help with, are they a good idea for a calorie intake reduction and trying to lose weight?
No and no.
Hmm.
You know, it really annoys me when I go to the supermarket. There's usually these days a whole aisle of this kind of energy beverage and that kind of specially formulated drink. And they, now they have antioxidant waters and vitamin waters. And, you know, they just sound like they're so darn good for you. And I'd really, really, really have you eat an orange and have a glass of water. 90% of what they claim is gimmicks, and the evidence behind it is so poor. And, you know, when they claim to give you energy, well, yeah, a lot of them have a lot of caffeine in them, which might kind of pep you up for a little while if you don't overdo it. But, you know, as far as really having some kind of secret combination that's really going to make you feel better, you know, what you expect to happen is way a bigger factor than what's actually in those liquids.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. So even the vitamin water put any vitamins in you?
No more than a vitamin pill. No. When I look at the vitamins in vitamin water, I don't feel any particular need to have more of them. I don't know really how they decided that that's what people would want to buy, and they usually color it some pretty color. And, I've seen people at the gym I go to drinking it, and I'm thinking, why are you doing that? It's just, to me, it's just a big waste of money.
Okay. Well, what about, by the way, join us again at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call if you want to chime in on this as we talk carbs and sugars with our guest, Sue Nitzke, professor in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. Glycemic index. That's something else we hear quite a bit about, and it's kind of controversial, as a matter of fact. And we can maybe open a little bit of a discussion on that. What is the glycemic index?
Well, the simple thing is it's an indication of how fast your blood sugar levels go up after you eat a food that contains a certain amount of carbohydrate. And if that carbohydrate is from an orange versus from a potato, how fast does your blood sugar go up? That's the question that the glycemic index tries to answer. Unfortunately, it's a pretty sloppy answer to that question. Mm. And most of the experts I know kind of just shake their heads and can't figure out any really useful a way to measure it that has a practical application.
So it's not something that we need to...
It's great if you want to sell books or magazine articles about a secret or a new exciting way to, you know, lose weight for your class reunion coming up this summer or something like that. But no, really, try not to be overly cynical. If there are some people like diabetics using an insulin pump who might actually find it to be a useful thing to follow. But by the time you're looking at foods in a mixed meal and trying to sort out what's high and what's low, I think it's way more important just to have you follow the dietary guidelines.
Sue Nitzke, our guest today, nutritional scientist at the UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking with Professor Sue Nitzke from the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison about food, of course. And we're looking a little bit at sugars and carbohydrates today, but taking your questions at 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And during the news break, we were drinking some Zero Coke that you brought along.
I brought it along. It's just an example. We were just talking a little while ago about artificial sweeteners, and the marketing of these products is so sophisticated. I've read that this product was specially formulated to taste the most like, quote, real Coke, and it's marketed to young men who think Diet Coke is for, you know, femmy or for girls or for sissies or something like that. So they have this one in a black can that looks more masculine and la, la, la.
And it's got zero on it.
Yeah. And, you know, they even market. I couldn't believe it wasn't that long ago. I was driving into work and I saw an ad for Bacardi rum and Diet Coke. And it said zero carbs and zero fat and la, la, la. And it sounded, you know, for all the world, like it was good for you. And the more you drank, the healthier you'd be. And I'm thinking, no wonder people are all confused. I mean, geez, you know, it's not that they're lying. It's just that they're leaving out
they're
whole big chunks
things
of important information. Yeah.
Marilyn in Kansasville, it's your turn. Hi, Marilyn.
Good morning, or good afternoon now. I've had something that's been bugging me for quite a time, and I've been just waiting for Sue to be on. We've always learned previously that it was never a good idea to, like, use saran wrap or a plastic bag to heat our or cook or heat our food in the microwave. Well, now I'm going to the market, and I'm seeing all these packages of vegetables that are steam fresh, and you cook in the plastic bag. And I'm wondering, is this safe, or how long is it going to be before we get a message saying, oh, sorry, folks, you shouldn't have been doing this?
Hmm. Well, there is that controversy now about some types of plastic in water bottles and so forth.
Right. That's a very in the clear water bottles, and not even all of them, but many of the hard, clear plastic water bottles have a compound in them that's been found to be a potential problem. So they're advising people to, you know, check the labels. This is a good Barb Ingham question.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the plastic wrap that's sold for you to cook with, and the plastic that's used by big companies for products that are meant to put in the microwave, has usually been tested to make sure that it doesn't migrate significantly into the food. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about that. If you could try writing to the company and ask if they've done any testing on the plastics they use for this product, but I doubt if there's any serious reason for concern.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Marilyn. And on to Carrie in Balsam Lake. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What do you know about aspartame?
Well, I think I know quite a bit. What would you like to know about aspartame?
Well, it was 4 years ago now where my daughter was a freshman in high school, and she was training heavily for track season, and she was drinking massive amounts of a diet drink mix, Crystal Light. And, you know, that was just a coincidence, but she started feeling really achy and run down, and she was leaking a fluid from her breast, a brownish-reddish fluid. And we brought her to the doctor. He couldn't figure it out. And they, you know, brought us to a specialist. They couldn't figure it out. Had an ultrasound, mammograms, tests. And finally, I brought her to a holistic doctor, and she figured it out right away. Said, what have you been drinking, or what is your eating habits? And I said, well, she drinks a lot of Crystal Light. She goes, oh, no. And it was caused from that. And after she stopped drinking it, of course, she never has since, all her symptoms went away, and...
That's- you know, Carrie, there's a lot of stories like this, and the various organizations have sort of re-looked at the evidence to see if there's some basis for believing that there's danger for aspartame or some of the other artificial sweeteners. And in fact, there was a fairly large review of what we call the toxicological evidence. Mike Parisa from our own Food Research Institute was, I think he was the lead author just last year or the year before. And you know, I read through about 50 pages of them summarizing all the studies they could find, all the well-conducted studies they could find, and they really ended with the conclusion that when you look at the scientific evidence, you just can't find a reason to think that these things should be happening. Now, if your daughter was training and there were probably other things going on in her life, and especially if she had a discharge from her breast, You can look for practitioners who will give you different kinds of advice, but I would be very careful not to be too ready to believe that it was caused by an artificial sweetener. Having said that, I see no problem in, you know, just cut it out. You don't need it in your diet for any particular reason. And like I was saying a little earlier, I'd much rather have people drink water or beverages with nutrients, naturally occurring nutrients in them, like orange juice or milk, and not look to whether they're artificially sweetened or sugar-sweetened beverages as a routine way of getting liquids into your diet.
still carries, probably going to say, well, there was all this discharge, and then she quit,
and
then
it went away. Yes. So that is evidence. It's not proof, but it's evidence. But when you look at the studies that tried to find an association based on, you know, people not having identified which kind of sweetener was in their beverage and that sort of thing, the reports of symptoms were equal among the different groups pretty much for the last 30 years. So once in a while you see, a Swiss study that had more of a certain kind of tumors in, you know, 20 rats kind of thing. But when you put all of the studies together, it just doesn't seem like there's any big reason for concern. So, you know, I'm not saying it's good for you. I'm just saying I don't see any convincing evidence that it's particularly harmful. I'd much rather have you look at the overall composition of your diet and see if that's meeting your needs than look for particular boogeymen.
Yeah. But in this case, I bet she never drinks that again.
Yeah, and, you know, I probably... It makes sense, for that particular person, if she feels better staying away from it, stay away from it. You don't need it for anything.
Thanks, Carrie. Janet in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Sue. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have two real quick questions, and then I'll let you talk. I had my whole colon removed in 2002, and I feel I have two problems. One is I can never seem to drink enough water. I am always thirsty. I always feel like I just swallowed a desert. And I can't seem to get over that. But then number two, I don't eat very much, and vegetables and fruits are a problem. So, of course, I take a vitamin a day, but then I sometimes don't feel that might be enough. So I was thinking about drinking that Ensure. And I just wanted to know, would I be actually getting something out of that Ensure?
Well, this is a really good reason to talk to a dietitian and really sit down and go over your diet and the particular needs you have after having this kind of surgery. If you had chemotherapy before your surgery, your feeling of constant thirst might actually be a lingering effect of some sort of drug treatment or that sort of thing. It's really hard to say what's causing that. But trying to work out some solutions and some ways to deal with this, there are some products that are specially formulated to help your mouth stay more moist feeling for, you know, people undergoing certain kinds of cancer treatment and that sort of thing. So a dietitian who's practicing in a medical facility could probably be more helpful to you than I can.
But what about...
Oh, and the Ensure, yeah.
What about Ensure?
Yeah, you know, it's a product that's developed for a purpose, and now it's marketed for an expanded purpose. For people who have a hard time just eating, maybe they have something wrong with their teeth or swallowing problems or chewing or something like that, it's a nice way to get sort of a balanced mix of calories and what we call macronutrients, the protein and carbs and fat. So as a temporary basis, I see no problem in using it. I wouldn't want you to, without working it out with a dietitian, I wouldn't want you to use that product as a long-term solution because there's nothing like a good mixture of real food to meet your nutrient needs whenever that's possible. That's the preferred way. In your circumstance, you know, a can of Ensure or one of those equal type of products a day might be a nice way to make you feel more like you're meeting your needs if you have to make certain modifications for other reasons.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks,
you're welcome.
Janet. And good luck to you. Appreciate it. Luann in Green Bay, it is your turn. Hi, Luann.
Hi. I'm calling. I'm a vegetarian and talking about sugars and natural carbs. I understand, obviously, the importance of getting my fruits every day, but I tend to try to buy local as much as possible, so that really limits my fruit choices during the winter months. So I tend to eat a lot more dried fruit. So I guess my question is, are you getting the same benefits from dried fruit that you get from regular fruit, and are there certain dried fruits that might give you more vitamins, more benefit, than just, you know, between the dried fruits.
Sure.
Whether they're dried or whole, we tell people to look for very colorful fruits and vegetables. The deep orange, I'm thinking of apricots and peaches and that sort of thing, have carotenoids and other, you know, you've heard a lot about antioxidant nutrients. So I would always go for something that's very colorful. If you're trying to eat local, you're certainly right. There's not a lot of local. I mean, I have strawberries and raspberries in my freezer that I either got from my garden or picked from a local supplier. So I consider those local. So that's another alternative. But I applaud you for trying to eat local and for supporting local farmers and skipping all of the transportation and packaging that often comes with food from far away. So I think if you just try, it sounds like what you're trying to do is you probably don't need a lot of advice. You're already aware of the fact that you need fruits and vegetables in your diet every day. If you're a vegetarian, are you a strict vegetarian? No milk, no cheese, no eggs, no fish?
Not vegan, just vegetarian.
Then probably just being very conscious of having kind of a good mixture and a good variety with your choices. And like I said, with the fruit and vegetables that you eat, looking for the highly colored, the orange, and for the vegetables, dark green, eating lots of beans and that sort of thing, I think you'll be fine.
Thanks.
Do you dry your own fruits, by the way?
Some of them I will. Some of the things that are easier, but, you know, especially for the moisture fruits, you really need the drying machines, and I don't have one of those. So I do freeze quite a bit, and I was pretty sure of the quality of the frozen vegetables. I just wasn't sure if in the drying process you lost anything.
Well, it doesn't affect the minerals, and most of the vitamins are just fine after drying. There are a couple, like vitamin C, that are more susceptible. So you might get more vitamin C, let's say, from a frozen strawberry than you would from a dried. But I always tell people the very first rule is to eat lots of fruits and vegetables. And then once you're doing that, if you want to, you know, get a better mix or look for the better forms, that's great. But don't stay away from dried fruit thinking they're not good for you because they have a little less vitamin C. Mm-hmm. Or in this case, maybe only half the vitamin C as a fresher or frozen form would.
Mm-hmm. And vitamin C is not the tough one. It's usually the other ones that are the tougher ones to get. So.
That's right.
Right. So in an overall mixed diet, I think some dried fruits are fine.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Thanks very
Ray.
Much for calling. I was thinking about breakfast this morning, a little breakfast cereal with some frozen strawberries and blueberries and then a banana sliced up, or part of a banana anyway. So I got pretty much most every day. That's about what I get with my bowl of cereal.
All right. Sounds great.
And it tastes good, too, although they're usually still partially frozen when I'm chomping on those blueberries, but that's all right.
Yeah, it's actually an art to get them just slightly frosty because then they're not as mushy, but not so hard they break your teeth. Yeah.
Karen in Eau Claire, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually on my way to school right now. I am a dietetic student at UW Stout, and I'm going to a food chemistry class right now.
Cool.
Where we recently did an experiment about sugars in different beverages. But just going back to the question about the vitamin water, that was one of the beverages that we did in the experiment. But what we were testing for was sodium and potassium. And even I feel the same way as you, Sue, about the, you know, getting your vitamins from whole natural foods versus, you know, drinking them or taking a multivitamin. But I did kind of think a little bit different after the experiment about getting, you know, some people who high energy, are exerting a lot of energy and sweating, you know, sometimes those drinks can be beneficial if they do have the sodium and potassium in them. And, like, for instance, my father, who he fishes all summer, and he'll be out fishing in a boat for 6 hours straight without really eating. And we found that he really benefited from just drinking a Gatorade or some kind of drink that had the potassium and sodium, or else he would get dehydrated and start to feel really sick just by drinking, you know, with just drinking just plain water.
Sure.
So I think that that's kind of beneficial, but all the things that you're talking about today is interesting because I'm learning all that in school. So.
Good for you, Karen.
Yeah, good for you. Thanks for calling. Well, you bring up a point that I'd like to just expand upon for a minute. I mentioned lots of people at my gym were drinking vitamin water and all these other products. There are people who are doing endurance sports or sports that involve a lot of perspiring over a long time, and they do need to be careful about how they rehydrate themselves. If you lose pounds and pounds of water in sweat, you probably need something more than just plain water for rehydration. It could probably be like diluted orange juice or that sort of thing. Most of those people are working with a trainer, and they kind of calculate what they need and decide how to rehydrate themselves. I'm talking about people who, you know, they just kind of go around to some of the machines for about a half hour and then they're on their way. And for those people, I don't think they need to have any special sports beverage.
As someone who likes to musky fish, I'll tell you what.
You could get dehydrated out in the sun.
You're standing in that boat, and the boat's rocking back and forth, and you're throwing heavy lures for, you're out there for maybe 10 hours during the course of a day, or maybe just even 8 hours, and maybe you're only off the water for a little quick lunch at noontime.
You mean you don't catch a 40-pound musky after about a half hour?
Well, I've never caught a 40-pound muskie at any time.
Okay.
I've caught some that were longer than 40 inches in less than a half hour, but then I've also fished all day and never seen a thing.
Right. Well, whatever the activity is, you know, and especially this time of year where the temperature goes up and down and up and down and we're not really acclimated to hot weather yet. When we do get those first hot days and you're out in the sun because it's just so wonderful to be outside playing ball or whatever, you can actually not realize that you're perspiring more than you thought you were and getting yourself a little bit dehydrated. So the very first thing is to make sure you get enough fluids. And then if you want to use Gatorade or some kind of thing, fine. But it's usually not necessary. Just having a little extra of whatever fluid you would enjoy, orange juice or milk or that sort of thing, also can rehydrate you and provide some of that sodium and potassium and the other minerals that you might have gotten a little low on.
Thanks, Karen, for calling. Appreciate it. And good luck with your studies, by the way.
Yes.
Good luck there. Karen in Portage is up next. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. The aspartame is my favorite soapbox. Something that I see is how they're sneaking it into products now. You know, saccharin was invented for diabetics. It took them how long and many years to decide it wasn't healthy, then said they were wrong. And aspartame, as far as I'm concerned, is for somebody that has specific health problems that they have to avoid sugar, not for kids, not for active adults. And now Wrigley's is sneaking it into all the gum. So the only gum that I can buy is Big Red. And I've talked to the company about it and gotten nowhere with it. It's probably because of, you know, sugarless gum for your teeth. Well, if I want sugarless gum, I'll buy sugarless gum. And it, you know, I wonder, you have to watch because it's easy because it'll say warning, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that word.
Phenylketonurix contains phenylalanine, yeah.
Well, what about that?
Yeah,
Sue?
Let me just say something. Actually, first of all, let me say that many sugar-free gums, the main sweetener is what we call a sugar alcohol, like xylitol or mannitol or maltitol. If it ends in O-L, it's not an alcohol like the alcohol that you drink.
Right.
It's just that kind of a chemistry molecule. And they have the benefit that they actually clean your teeth a little bit and lower the risk of tooth decay. So they're a popular product. But if you don't like the ingredients in them, and if one of the sweeteners is aspartame and you don't like the idea of having aspartame, I think looking very carefully at the labels for what you do and don't want in your products, I applaud that, even if I don't think it's necessarily a public health recommendation that you're trying to follow. So if I could get more people to look at the ingredient list when they go shopping, pick out the two or three things that you buy most often and make sure you know what's really in there and that's what you want to be eating. I think that would go a long way of just making us more conscious of what we're just popping in our mouth all day long.
I try not to pop it in all day long. But
well, yeah. You know what I mean. I'm not just gum, but everything that we eat and drink.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, Sue. And, oh, we had lots of callers, but we're out of time. I thank you so much.
Well, it's great to be here.
And thanks for the Zero Coke. I hadn't tried that before, so I guess maybe I wasn't the marketing. I think they were after young guys.
My understanding is it's marketed especially heavily to guys that think that Diet Coke is for girls, so they need a product of their own. Yeah.
Thanks, Sue. Sue Nitzke, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, works in the Department of Nutritional Sciences, where she serves as a professor. Another professor joins us tomorrow, somebody that Sue knows too. Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, comes by the first Wednesday of the month.
The spring peepers.
To talk spring peepers and other things wild. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.